Con Show with Anna Blontis right here on 720 WGN. Not in the studio with us, Dan Herbert is here, and Dan Herbert is the attorney for Jason Van Dyke, who's the Chicago police officer who shot and killed Laquan McDonald, and has now been charged with murder. And I've said this a number of times. I know you can't get into the detail of this. That seems like a very, very hard, and I've said this to Anita Alvarez, I've said it to all the candidates now for state's attorney. This is a very, you know, it's a very tricky business here. Chicago police officer in the line of duty. This young man, who we now know in the aftermath, a troubled young man, was approaching with a knife, brandishing the knife, clearly deploying the knife, and approaching these officers with dispatch. I don't know how a jury finds that as murder. I mean, there's a lot of questions about the 16 shots. I think everybody has that, but the initial shots don't seem to be not justified. So, I know one of the issues here is that they are calling for a special prosecutor. Their alderman calling for a special prosecutor. What does that mean for you and your case?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I haven't seen any of the names that they have proposed as a fill-in for the prosecutor. I think it's probably something that is not going to occur. I know in this case, the state's attorney has appointed two seasoned and veteran prosecutors who are good at what they do. So quite frankly, if somebody wanted to substitute less experienced and less skillful lawyers as prosecutors, we would be welcome to that in this case. But I think it's something that's not going to take place. And but regardless, we are going to be prepared to defend ourselves no matter who is on the other side.
And do you want this to move to another venue? I heard that was a request that you would like, because you don't feel that he could get a fair trial here in Cook County.
Yeah, I've spoken about that in the past. We're under a decorum order. The judge in this case, who's a very fair man and a very good judge.
But just lost weight. Did he get his haircut? Yes,
he's looking great. Yeah,
it looks
doesn't
great.
Age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. But anyways, you know, he has rightfully put a kind of a decorum order on here. And, you know, speaking to the change of venue, we're going to, in this case, we're going to explore and utilize every tool in our toolbox. And we plan on filing a lot of different motions. And with respect to the change of venue, you know, it's important for a defendant in this country that they receive a fair and impartial trial, and it's important and it's their fundamental right to have a trier of fact that is not predisposed to a certain finding in the outcome. And you know, those are all the things that we're going to weigh in this case as well as in every other case.
Mm-hmm. Well, just speak generally about that. When you ask in Cook County for a change of venue, they can move you out of 26th Street, and they can move you down to Markham, and they can move you up to Skokie, right? But can you get to another county?
Yeah, there's
in general,
there's a number of ways that it can be done. There can be a jury from a different county brought into 26th in California to hear the case.
Oh, I'm sure they love that.
It depends where they're from.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
they might find that extravagant and beautiful.
There's some
and
beautiful restaurants around. There are some great restaurants on like 24th Street. That are, you know.
Are you talking about over by Pilsen?
Right by 26th in California. There's some
that
really great restaurants. But anyway, separate issue.
Yeah.
All right. So there's some people who might like it. But it does seem like that. Can you go to another jurisdiction?
Yeah, that's a possibility as well. I'll be honest, it doesn't happen too often in Cook County. I think the last time
This is a very unique case, though, right?
It really is.
You're a former Chicago copper, right? So, I mean, this is one of those things, and I just kind of want to talk about this as an issue. And again, without directly referencing your client in this case, you know, Chicago police, when they go on the street, my experience has been, knowing the dozens that I know, they don't want to go out and kill anybody. That's not a good day. They don't want to go out and pull out their weapon. That's not a good day. But they work in very, very tough conditions, and in some, you know, some places, it's very, very, very bad. And I guess what this jury would have to do is figure out whether that was in the heart of your client, that he did want to go out and kill somebody that day. But when you're called to a scene, You know, I just I'm lost by this. And as a former copper, you have to have you got to look at this a little bit. You know, there's emotion in this, I would imagine, for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. I've represented hundreds of police officers. You know, I as you said, I was a police officer. I also was involved in a use of force situation. And you're correct when you say that the last thing a police officer wants to do is to become involved in a situation where they are required to use deadly force. What they want to do is they want to work their tour of duty. They want to go home to their spouse, to their kids, and that is their goal. So it's very difficult. They're in a very difficult job, I would say now much more so than any other time because you know, the neighborhoods in which they are forced to patrol have really turned into war zones. And there's
and the politics are worse now, right? I mean, the reality is, yes, the brutal nature of what's going on in the streets, the type of weaponry, which has been around for a while now, but it's different than it was 20 years ago, let's say, and the bloodlessness as gangs are starting to realize that, you know, the money train of marijuana especially is going to be going away here very, very soon. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to position themselves for other kinds of drugs or other kinds of businesses like any organized crime is. And you got a bunch of, and the police and the federal government have been too good at decapitating these organizations. But now you got, as opposed to 30-year-olds running 20-year-olds who are running 15-year-olds, you now have 20-year-olds running 15-year-olds. Right.
Yeah. No. That's it's very true. I mean, there are so many factors that result in the criminal war that we have today. And you know, unfortunately, police officers and their use of deadly force seems to be kind of like the focus of the result of a criminal world. But there's so many different other socioeconomic factors that have to be looked at.
I sure, mean, there's no question about that.
For everything to be fair, but...
So, but the politics of this, and that's... And I want to get to that in a second, but the politics of this now, because the release of this video, I think that the fact that this video wasn't released in a timely manner made it seem as though there was an attempt to cover up. There was an attempt not to seek some sort of redress or justice in this case, although there was mm-hmm. almost immediate redress to the family. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a fair inference to make. And, you know, I guess nobody really knows what the reasoning was behind keeping that videotape disclosed as long as it was. But as far as the politics, you know, politics have been around forever. But I do agree with kind of your assertion that the politics have gotten tougher for police officers and really for any worker out there, it seems very clear that it is having a boss that will support you and have your back, so to speak, that seems to be much less of a characteristic of a supervisor today than it was 20 to 30 years ago.
After what happened with Laquan McDonald and Jason Van Dyke, your client, there's been this call for greater transparency, kind of for what Roe talked about, for one thing, is that why didn't we get to see the video? Why did it seem like there was this elaborate cover-up? Why weren't people telling us? Why didn't the police reports reflect what actually happened at that scene that was very clear when you saw the video? Now this whole movement to get the body cams out there. Do you have a feeling about that, being a former police officer and being in this situation? Will that help police? Do you like the idea of putting body cams on all of the police officers?
You know, I think body cameras are great. As long as they're used properly, and we really haven't seen how they're going to be utilized. But I have had dozens more video cases that have exonerated my clients than have condemned them. So I think that video certainly is the future. I think that there are so many positives to having video. I worry about how it's going to be executed utilizing the video.
Well, and there's the other question here too, which is the audio component of many of the police officers' cars that do have the dash cams, which is, you know, the medium by which we learned about that. We saw the visual mm-hmm. of what happened with Laquan McDonald, but you don't hear the audio. And I've been told by people on the job that they're aware of, and they speculate that, you know, some officers do try to get a workaround for that audio because they're in the car for their entire tour, as you point out. And when they're in the car, they don't. And they're talking about a lot of stuff. I mean, you're you know, you understand that. It's like they're not
buses,
just,
wives,
yeah, girlfriends, ex-wives. Right? What they're having for dinner, and they don't necessarily want everything, you know, to be recorded, and so that is one of those things. And now they found that, you know, that's, you know, that now there's been another general order out to try to fix all of that stuff and make sure that those are in working order. I think actually the interesting thing about this is what you might have gotten from the audio, you might have actually gotten even more exculpatory data for your client if that audio were working, because I think you do in most of these cases. I mean, we've all known of pretty isolated and crazy cases of mm-hmm. police abuse in this city, but they're pretty rare compared to what actually does occur, you know, and to the number of incidents that police have, and then the number of incidents that they never get credit for, where they defuse a situation or take a really dangerous guy into custody without any shots being fired, which happens every night in this city,
right? Or get shot at themselves and not return fire, but take somebody down or manage to handle the situation.
Like, you just saw the video on the expressway last week, mm-hmm. you know, people chasing, you know, cops doing their job perfectly to chase a guy who ran off the expressway and then up and thought he was going to be able to get away. All right. So to your client specifically here, and I don't know if you can comment on this, but how is his general mindset about this?
He's certainly having a lot of trouble. I think every day leading up to the indictment was very difficult for him because we essentially knew that it was coming. Every day since the indictment has certainly not been good either. It's wearing on him. It's wearing on his family. He's concerned about not so much his safety, but he's certainly concerned about his wife and his kids. But also, you know, he's also really handling this like a professional. I think that the stress that this man is under would break 99% of the people out there, because it really is a tremendous amount of stress. And, you know, I've told him this. I'm pretty proud of the way he's kind of held up to this. And, you know, he's prepared for the fight, and we know it's going to be a difficult fight, but it's one that he believes in, that I believe in, and at the end of the day, we're going to see what happens.
Do you have a sense of when the trial might start?
I would assume probably within a year. We've received a lot of evidence in this case. It's thousands of pages. Once we go through the evidence, there's going to be motions filed. And I would suspect that it would probably be somewhere within a year.
Okay. All right. Well, Dan, thank you very much for being with us and honest about all this that is going on here. Dan Herbert is the attorney for Jason Van Dyke, Chicago police officer, shot and killed Laquan McDonald. That's the videotape that everybody has seen here with the police mm-hmm. officer shooting Laquan McDonald, and then once he's on the ground, continuing to fire and created protests not just here but around the country. And yet, when you talk to law enforcement experts and you talk to people, prosecutors and cops and all of that, they're going to tell you that there are questions about the number of shots fired, but mm-hmm. there may be some explanation for that. I don't know that you know, in a civil setting would make anybody feel any better. But from a criminal standpoint, it would seem unlikely. But they brought the full weight and force of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office and even potentially the federal government. Right. I mean, would you represent them in that if they come after him?
Yeah, we were prepared for the federal government to bring charges in this case. They really did a lot of the legwork. So, I mean, if in fact charges were to be brought by the federal government, that would be obviously most likely after the state case, mm-hmm. and I probably would represent Jason in that as well.
Got it. All right. Dan, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.